Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. And that is really what we're going to be talking about today, that and more. This is Donna Sebo. I'm so delighted you're able to join me. Today, we are going to be talking about a different version of what we call reality. Maybe a little bit about science, maybe a little about the spiritual, maybe a little bit about the supernatural. Intriguing to you? Well, I think my guest, Thomas Fusco, is a man who has traveled a journey that has involved both the spectrums of science as well as spirituality, as well as myth, as well as a number of other things. And he's put together a book, Behind the Cosmic Veil. Now, this journey took him 20 years, but it started because of unique experiences. Welcome, Thomas, to the show.
Hi, Donna. Thanks for having me on.
Well, you know, Thomas, when I got your material and your book, well, it's a fairly thick one. It's not something you're going to read through in a half an hour. But when I was going through the very first pages, I read the story about your particular experience, and I said, this man, in my understanding, in my world, could very easily be defined as someone who not only is highly intuitive, but would also have mediumship talents. Now, in my world, that's not something unique. In many people's world, it is. Won't you share with my audience, Thomas, the experience you had that opened up your thinking and your world of so-called practical reality to the paranormal?
Well, I think you're referring to something that happened to me in my teen years in high school. I had just met a girl who lived adjacent to the school. She invited me over one day to lunch to her parents' house, of course. While she was in the kitchen making sandwiches, I was looking around the living room and looking at all the art that was hanging on the walls. I came in front of one particular painting, and after viewing it for a moment, I suddenly got a very sharp pain in my left arm. And when the girl came back with the sandwiches from the kitchen, I'd asked her a very odd question. It just came off the top of my head. And I said, you know, did the person who painted this picture ever injure their left arm? Now, who would even think that she would know who painted the picture to begin with? And she got quite a look on her face. I think she almost dropped the sandwiches. And she said that several years before, her older brother had actually painted this. And during the time that he was painting it, he was working out in the backyard with a chainsaw and actually injured his left arm very severely with it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that kind of experience and several others over the next, you know, handful of years led me to call into question what I had learned in physics about the way the universe was put together. Now, for me, it was not an issue of, how would I say it? The fascination to me was not so much in the practice or the experience of this type of a thing, but in coming up with an explanation for it that would be consistent with a scientific model of how reality is put together.
Well, I know no matter who you talk to, everyone has their own paradigm of reality. But again, with being involved myself in the aspect of the study of mind and the unique, what's considered paranormal, and all paranormal means is it's outside of what our everyday understanding is, whatever that might be, whatever culture we come from, it determines a lot of our, gee, what is this response? And when I was going through your material, you talked about how people have been looking at the evidence in the wrong way. Now, there have been a lot of researchers that have for years documented all kinds of situations. There's organizations today that have testing facilities on this. But you wanted to go into a whole different paradigm with this. Why was this important to you? Why was exploring the physics of the laws, that's the word I will use, in association with demonstration of things like materialization of objects, all of this, which has been talked about for eons? I mean, it's written in recorded history going back thousands of years in Indian literature. Why was the physics so important to you?
For me, the question of whether these types of phenomena exist was not a matter of consideration. As you say, they've been recorded for so many centuries that it wasn't a matter of trying to prove its existence. But for me, being a very pragmatic and scientifically minded person, my understanding is that the universe, being a system that is very constrained to certain ways of behavior, has to behave according to a set of laws and principles. All of these type of paranormal phenomena and parapsychology, all these areas, are observable. They are able to be experienced. Consequently, they have to be a tangible part of physical reality. And since they're a subset of the universe in which they exist, they have to behave according to the laws and principles that govern the greater universe. And if we don't see how that can be, it means our understanding of those laws and principles is either defective or deficient in some way. As far as being compelled to seek that answer, I just think that's part of my temperament. It's just the way I'm put together. I had to know why. And that's what really initiated all this research.
You say you want to see a new system of paranormal classification. Why?
The problem that we have in this field, in paranormal phenomena, is that the way that we classify these things, the way that we describe these phenomena, is pretty much like very many other things that we perceive and describe with our language. They're based on our perceptions. And a lot of the terminology dates back to the 19th century. At least the concepts behind those terminologies do. For me, this was part of the issue. I wanted to come up with something which had a whole new way of describing and classifying these phenomena in a way that allows us to conceive and contemplate a different aspect to them, something different than what has been traditionally viewed and considered.
An individual that you write about in your book, and it's in the chapter Enigma of the Paranormal, is Ted Searles. Tell us about Ted, because there may be many people in the audience that have never heard about him. I believe he's passed on. But tell us about Ted, what you found out about him, what he did, and what made him so unique.
Ted Searles was my recollection serves me, he was a Chicago bellhop. And after a serious illness and kind of, I think he was kind of horsing around with a friend of his with an instamatic camera, one of these Polaroid instant developing cameras. He pointed it at his face and took a picture, and then some other kind of an image came out on it. And so this was very puzzling, obviously, and through personal experimentation, he found that he could actually create images of remote locations by pointing a camera at his face and taking a picture. And this has been studied quite a bit at the time. In fact, there was an institute that did laboratory experiments with him. And
right, it
found
was a
no reason to consider any kind of a fraud. And so the important thing about this type of a phenomenon that was displayed by his abilities is that somehow information was being imposed upon the film, which is what we would call non-local. In other words, he wasn't taking a photograph of the actual physical object, the information of which would have been coming off of that through the light and onto the film. That information was coming to that camera from a non-local location and actually transmuting the chemical composition of the film. And so this is a very important piece of evidence because it shows how information can materialize and actually change the basic nature of physical reality that that we're viewing and experiencing.
Yes, Thomas, you state that he went through controlled testing by researchers at the Division of Parapsychology of the University of Virginia Medical School, and they found no deceit on his part whatsoever. But this is something that can be done. It can be done. There are many different facts of research and information on energy being transferred. Olga Worrell was an incredible healer. She and her husband were just phenomenal healers. And she did all kinds of scientific experiments that were documented. She could be thousands of miles away, and there'd be energy that would show up in the laboratories, and she could be put in a Faraday cage. It didn't make any difference, and it was demonstrable. And she had this capability, and she was more than willing to do any research regarding it because it was a very important part of her life. And she said, this is something we need to understand because it is going according to natural law. Now, one of the many parts of your book, you talk about the cosmological puzzle. There are scientific anomalies that you bring out in your book. You bring out all kinds of information, but you came up with a word. I've not heard this particular term before, supergeometry. Why did you coin that word, and what does it mean?
There's a belief, an opinion, which has persisted for centuries and even circulates within the scientific community itself, that there is a body of coherent information, call it what you will, a database, a matrix, a blueprint, that exists outside of space-time, outside of the physical, but it is connected to the physical. Some might even call it another dimension. Others might call it the spirit realm. There's all different kinds of terminology for it. But the essence of it is that that information dictates what the nature of physical reality is. For example, in the 20th century, we have a couple of predominant or very prominent physicists, David Bohm. He called it implicate order. John Wheeler, who a lot of people have heard of, the physicist John Wheeler, called it pregeometry. And David Finkelstein called it coherent superpositions. Edgar Cayce, who a lot of people are familiar with, he called it the Akasha. Exact same concept. The reason why I came up with supergeometry was twofold. Number one, the word geometry is not ambiguous. It's not esoteric. Everybody understands what that is. And it gives us a mental impression of the structure, the makeup, the order of reality. Geometry is a very clear mental image. And in the scientific community, we tend to talk about various systems and their subsystems as subsets and supersets. And so consequently, this information being outside of space-time and determining what goes on in space-time should have the prefix of super. And that's where the term supergeometry comes from. I just think it's the most effective way to convey this age-old concept.
The kahunas of Hawaii, the old ones, I don't know about the modern kahunas, but the old ones were very much aware of how to work with matter and how to be able to transmute things, physiologically make changes. There were so many things that they understood, and they had to go through a lot of training for this. Native American cultures speak of this. I have had the privilege through the years of meeting some very, very talented people who went through very, very intense training with disciplines to understand how important this is. Yogis in India, they have done things that when people read about them, it's not possible. But it is possible. So when we go into this mindset in our quote-unquote modern world of today, where we often hear everything is energy, and it can change form. It can bring a different result. Depending on what culture you're from, that may or may not be comfortable. What enabled you to be comfortable as you were doing this research with the exploration you were doing? Did you find yourself getting excited as you did more and more research? How has this changed your life, Thomas?
Well, that's a lot of different questions, Donna.
Well, that's okay. You can answer them all. It's all right.
You know, did I get excited when I started making connections? Absolutely. When the concept, the basic cosmological concept, finally took form and started seeing all the pieces fit together in it, yeah, it was very exciting. As far as being distracted or disturbed or anything like that, my goal was to search for truth. And again, this isn't part of my temperament that I'm not afraid of the truth. I desire the truth. I think there's two types of world views in the world in that area. There are people who love the truth and seek it, and there's people who spend the same amount of time and energy and effort doing everything they can to avoid the truth. It's just the way that they've learned how to deal with reality. For me, that never was an issue. How this changed my life is that I have peace. I understand now what's going on. And I guess for me, that was always the key to knowing the truth, to knowing the reason whys, you know, the whys and the wherefores, is that it gave me peace. It let me understood what was going on. And so I knew my place and I knew what was happening around me. And certainly there's very little that in the supernatural realm that comes along that does not have its place within this understanding that I have.
Now, someone listening to our chat might say, he comes to this understanding. Wow, what is it exactly? What is it that you have come to understand?
Well, that's that's a good question. I think that first we should say on the scientific point of view is that I've come to an understanding that the reason why many of these things seem mysterious is because we haven't been looking at them in the right way. And of all the various many ways that we can look at the physical reality around us, the one that kept coming up consistently is the idea of information, that this is a modern scientific concept, that all matter and energy in the universe, the particles and the waves by which they're, you know, constructed, themselves are constructed from a body of information. this understanding is so strong that in modern physics we have an extension to the traditional laws of conservation to say matter and energy can neither be created nor destroyed. The modern extension to that is that the information from which those things are constructed can neither be created nor destroyed. Once that became the fundamental understanding of the universe for me, then everything else began to fit together. When we have a miraculous healing, for example, the information that was represented the person as a whole, healthy being already existed. It was just a matter of materializing that information in place of the damaged information that was in the physical realm, and it would be restored. In remote viewing, what we're doing is having a materialization of information that is of a remote location in the arena of our brain. And on, when we start, what I say is my definition of the universe is that it is an expression of materialized and materializing information. So this became the connective tissue that everything began to connect together with. The questions that arise from that are twofold. Where does the information come from? And we've talked about that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And how is that information materialized? What is the process? That was the key. That was the piece of the puzzle that has always been missing. And as you know, the way I describe it in my book, I talk about the folds of space actually being the crucibles in which information materializes when it falls from the higher realm down into, light speed and below. So that gravity and the bending of space is actually a cause for matter rather than gravity being an effect. And it just opens up everything and provides so many answers.
I find it so intriguing whenever you read about people who write about inventions or discoveries of different types. So many of them have had either dream experiences or they find themselves in this altered state where they're given images. It's as if there is a download process that enables us to move forward. And it's so intriguing. I just am fascinated with it. And, of course, Gene Roddenberry is a man that I think had phenomenal vision. And when you watch the old Star Trek shows that they did on a budget that was so minuscule compared to the millions that they spend today, for whatever they produced, it's amazing the information that was conveyed, and you bring that out. And so for those of you that are Star Trekkies, you'll enjoy this segment in his book quite a bit, Behind the Cosmic Veil. But I really think that many times there are those downloads of information, and he and his staff of writers, most of those writers had tremendous scientific backgrounds. And they were visionaries in their own way. And so they had this layout of what if? What if we could do this? What if we could do that? What's the possibilities? How can we bring across ideas? And I think this man was so far ahead of his time, as many sci-fi writers are, like Arthur C. Clarke and so many others. They dip into this cosmic soup. It's like they've got a ladle that's given to them, and they're able to take so much out, and they get a taste of it, and they go, I think I'll take some of this. This is going to work pretty good. And they put it into a format that often science ends up following through and developing. And it is absolutely wonderful when you can watch things and see things that are being brought in to the world because of someone being able to dip into this cosmic soup, absorb it, and then bring out the information. So in one form or another, it's going to come into its own, what you would call, format. The programming has been put out there so it can happen. And I really find your book has all kinds of different perspectives in it. And when I was at the end of your book, the word super geometric devices, when you were talking about UFOs, you bring out so many different points of information that in your experience you feel must be made available to anybody that wants to be open and receptive to these new understandings of what goes on with the mind. And I think that that is vitally important. I think being open and receptive to new ideas, to new concepts, that is what makes this life so absolutely mesmerizing. I think it's an adventure, and I think if we're willing to learn and we're willing to grow, it's exciting. And that's part and parcel of what you convey, I feel, in my realistic perception that your book gives out. Now, I know we're coming close to being able to close out our interview, and there's so much more in your book, Thomas, than we've even been able to cover. What is your website that people can go to find out more about your book, Behind the Cosmic Veil?
Everything about the book, the related articles, where to purchase the book, even a contact email, all that can be found at www.cosmicveil, that's V-E-I-L, cosmicveil.com.
Thomas Fusco, it has been delightful having you as a guest. For those of you listening, please be sure that you check out his website, cosmicveil.com. His book is Behind the Cosmic Veil. It is his vision, a new vision, as he perceives it, of reality, merging science, the spiritual, and the supernatural. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be taking a break. We are going to be back in just a moment. And for those of you that are with us right now, we are going to be interviewing Lou Paradise, because we were not able to have him on yesterday because of a major power outage in New York. So we're going to be coming back and talking with Lou again. Check out cosmicveil.com. Thomas Fusco has been my guest. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Topperson will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Topperson. Topperson is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Topperson or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Topperson, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedros accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny. They will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Hello, this is Donna. I'm so delighted that you're with me, and we have a special guest, Luke Paradise. We were to have had him on yesterday, but there was a major, major power outage in New York, so nothing was working for a good deal of time, and it happened just when we started the interview yesterday. So we've got him on today, and we're going to be talking about a subject matter that is so significant, and it's very near and dear to my heart because I have seen this personally. I have known family members that have been affected and children that have been affected by this. Now, what are we going to be talking about? We are going to be talking about drug addiction, babies that are addicted to drugs. And Lou Paradise is a man, you've heard him on my show before. Lou is so knowledgeable about this because his world, his professional world, revolves around making people's lives, one, healthier, and two, eliminating to the best of their capacity pain. And that's because of the wonderful product that you hear me talking about just about every day on the show. Believe me, it works. But today we're going to give you information about a major issue that is going on today in the United States. Actually, it affects babies around the world, but we're going to focus on the U.S. Lou Paradise, welcome to the show.
Donna, as always, thank you so very much for the generosity of your time and being here. It's a privilege, as always, as everybody knows you well enough to have tuned into any one of your forums and educational pieces knows that Donna Sebo really cares about people, and you don't bring anyone on the air unless it's something that you believe truly is going to be a benefit to the audience. So I am very humbly thanking you for the opportunity to be here this morning. Thank you so much.
Lou, when we were talking about what we were going to discuss today, mm-hmm. and you sent me some of the latest information that has been published on drug-addicted babies. Mm-hmm. Now, I can remember this being a problem many years ago, and I've known so many stories. I've known foster parents that have taken in these babies that, I mean, they're just, as soon as they're born, they're screaming in pain. They're going mm-hmm. through this stuff. Let's talk about what is happening. This one report just blew my mind. I mean, the Florida Attorney General, Pam Bondi, there's even a video that she did. She said a crack baby epidemic. She wanted the state legislature in Florida to establish a task force to compile data on drug-exposed babies and develop prevention strategies. And I'm just saying to myself, oh, my gracious, this is, well, Lou, how did you become aware of this? What brought this to your attention?
You know, we, Donna, the sad thing, you know, you think about our nation's children and infants especially, you know, why are they all important? Well, maybe because they're the future of the entire planet Earth, something like that right there. A good deal of the information that people don't know because it isn't something that's bigger news for whatever reason, or people don't see it, they don't hear about it, if they're not in a situation where their families are young and having children, or they don't look at statistics, they don't see all kinds of things happening in the marketplace that is evident and obvious, they miss this particular one. You know, years ago, you know, we probably maybe 5 years ago, it's up to 5 or 6 years ago, we would hear about this for crack babies and how terrible it was. You know, addicted moms, however they got addicted, passing this on to their little ones. And of course, this goes through the those kinds of chemicals go through the blood brain barrier, through the placenta. These are not, you know, siphoned off and, you know, detoxified before the baby gets it. And so we have these beautiful little infants that are addicted now. You know, the National Institutes of Health and other big organizations and institutes for pain are calling the OxyContin, Vicodin, Lorset, Percocet, opiate addiction, especially OxyContin, the defining epidemic of the 21st century. So we have a vast, much larger group. So now it's not just crack babies. Now it's scripted medicine that moms are taking that is affecting infants. And when you think of the doctors and nurses that we talk to, because we do a lot of our work in rehabilitation and especially in oncology, chemo-induced oncology, juvenile diabetes, juvenile cancer. So a lot of the information started to come to us way back in actually 2009. They started to do a first report. According to the statistics then, and just to give people the magnitude of how big this really is, because most people haven't even heard about this, in the Medicaid system, which often takes care of newborns, the numbers for treating addicted infants was $720 million. And the nurses, we talked to the nurses, especially the caregivers, and said, you know, can you tell? Because you wonder, okay, the difference between something that's, you know, a disturbance in a newborn and some kind of quirky stuff that happens with little ones until they, you know, get a day or two in the world. And they said, oh, my God, yes, you know, we can tell so instantaneously because you're talking about, you know, hearing the way they cry. You know, these are kids that have, you know, they're hard to console. They feel very stiff. Their muscles are rigid and won't relax. They have tremors, seizures, breathing problems. And you're saying to yourself, first thing you say is, oh, my God, how in the world, what is happening to our whole society where we have this kind of influence? And no one knows, nobody knows the long-term effect. But we really need to expose these kinds of things so people can really take action. Look, if this isn't a reason why people who really can, if they truly were guided properly to get off these opiate medications, if this isn't a really, really profound reason to get off opiates and start looking at these things as, you know, we cannot live on these kinds of products, and yet people are doing it, hard-working, incredibly honest, decent people who kind of got there maybe after a surgery or after a root extraction, canal, whatever. And that's why... that's how we found out, because we have lots of practitioners who love our work with Topperson and in rehab and reconstructive surgery and post-surgery and oncology for chemo-induced neuropathy, diabetic neuropathy, and especially when it comes to children. And that's how we started to find out about this.
You know, Lou, I wanted to share a story with a client of mine, and this was an African-American woman. She was very mature in years, and she had been taking care of foster children. Now, when I knew this lady, I'll call her Jane. Jane had been a foster parent for a number of years. Now, in her late 50s, she decided that she was going to work with two little babies. These were boy babies. They had been brought to her by social workers. And just what you described, and this was before the OxyContin started in. It had to do with heroin. It had to do with crack. the mothers of both of these babies were serious drug addicts. The babies had been taken away from them. They were both under a year of age. Now, for this woman to take them into her home, and she said, I will raise them. Now, the social services department was having a very difficult time placing children that had been born addicted to drugs because they had to have very special care. You had to pay attention. This just wasn't the standard baby. And so she was sharing with me what she had to go through. Well, there came a time, and the social services could not place these babies. So she was raising these children. When they started to get into school, they were about 6, 7 years old when they started into school. One of the children was having a very difficult time because the brain was not developing that well. And she worked with this child, and she worked with the other child. And one time someone came to her and said, well, maybe we ought to try to find a home for him. She said, you don't understand. I have raised them since they were a few days old. These children have a big, big group of obstacles to overcome. And these obstacles cannot be overcome in just a normal environment. It's not going to work. And the children were having trouble in school, and but she figured out how to work with them. And today I know that they are functioning adults. But one of the things that occurred is that she had to be very sure these children were not given medication because their bodies reacted chemically to medicine due to the fact that they had been crack heroin babies. Now, we're going back, I think this is back in the 80s when I started talking with her. And I remember our interaction into the 90s. And so I was able to find out about all of these different things with the children. And that is something that is really a dilemma because you have brain functioning that is severely affected by these drugs. What you mentioned about their stiff little bodies, they have got a chemical, they've been given a chemical soup, if you will, that is just in their system, and the body doesn't let it go. It can stay in that system, even in the brain cells, for the rest of their lives. Yeah. We just haven't a clue.
Exactly. You know, you look at the issue for a child, and you look at breathing problems or low birth weight or feeding problems. They don't take the bottle. All those things, and from that point, a very important developmental stage before they become little toddlers and into that 5, 6, and 7 years. And by the time that happens, these residues can be hanging, like you said, can hang out in the body for forever. I mean, for years and years at least. When you look at this from a point of addiction and how this is such an out-of-control circumstance, if you look at the basic component of OxyContin and you look at heroin, well, OxyContin is basically legal heroin. And the CDC has ultimately flagged, you know, the prescription painkiller abuse as a major health threat, obviously noting that there are more overdoses, Donna, on these painkillers than the deaths with somebody abusing heroin and cocaine combined. You know, so so the addiction is such a high rate. The life-changing condition that happens for the adult in a house with young children, let alone, you know, children that may not have ever been addicted, but there's a whole other level of abuse. But imagine that we have circumstances where the mother of a child who she's carrying, for whatever reason, is on these kinds of drugs, and now this baby is suffering who knows what kind of immeasurable damage. You had indicated this one child that you talked about for the crack baby was developmentally, you know, not getting to the place where they need to go. I mean, it's the saddest thing in the world, and that's why we really have to have strong advocacy. You know, we play a very big role in that, in preventing, in the post-surgical sense. We actually are now in a new protocol where most people using Toprosyn for post-surgical issues are getting the product prior to surgery, after surgery, and that they are not using anywhere near the amount of opiates. And instead of a week to 10 days typically, maybe a day or two if they use them at all. So we can actually look at how do we prevent that honest, incredibly caring, loving person who's probably still struggling to keep a roof over the head of the family, the clothes on the back, the food on the table. And these are the folks that get into this kind of abuse without realizing it because these products are so incredibly addictive. And I mean, some of the stats coming back saying, you know, if you're taking more than 3 or 4 days dosages of some of these products, you can actually become addicted right then and there and have a very tough time withdrawing. Aging population, of course, will have a tendency to that. Anyone who's on scripted medicine already, who's suffering from arthritis or lower back or those kinds of things, will get there. One of the big number one reasons why people get Vicodin as a specific opiate is from dental care, you know, tooth extraction or root canal. You know, so there's innocent ways that people are trying to, you know, doctors are trying to help their patient, but there's no monitoring. There's no very strong monitoring. Like, you can only be on this product one day and then call me, you know, and then let me know how you're feeling. And if your pain is sufficiently reduced, get off it completely and don't go to day number two. I mean, that's really the kind of thing that we're talking about here. So here we are with this sad, sad, sad stats on little, tiny, beautiful new people coming into the world having the problem in the physical, mental, emotional, and every other conceivable problem because nobody understood the magnitude of what was going to happen here on the adult level, and now the adults are passing it on to these little, beautiful children, which is just the saddest thing in the world, I think.
I think so. And the reality is, and this, I don't know why this is not enforced. I mean, when I'm referring to being enforced, anything a pregnant woman takes into her body, anything, food, doesn't make any difference, drugs, it has an effect on the baby because the baby feeds off the mother. When she has that baby and then she goes to nurse, anything that she ingests, anything she takes in, supplements, I don't care what it is, it has an effect on the value of the milk, the nutrition that comes out to feed that baby. And you'd think that that was understood, but there is a powerful statement that when I read it, I just, oh my goodness, I almost, you could have your hair turn white when you find out this information. When they find out, when doctors find out that a woman is pregnant and she's a drug addict, they really, really want to help them. But a lot of the pregnant women will hide the fact that they're addicted because they don't want their children taken from them. And Mary Newport, who is the medical director of neonatal intensive care at Spring Hill Regional Hospital in Spring Hill, Florida, I was just stunned, and I'm going to quote directly from some of the material you sent me. A pregnant woman cannot quit cold turkey because as she goes into withdrawal, the baby goes into withdrawal too, and the baby will actually have seizures in the womb. And they'll die. The baby will be miscarried. The baby just can't handle it. And 1 in 20 babies born in a community north of Tampa is addicted to painkillers. Holy Moses. And her statement was, I didn't go to medical school to become a pain management doctor for a newborn. It's been thrust upon us. We feel very, very sorry for the babies, and it's very, very difficult for us to understand why these young women think it's okay, most are addicted before they get pregnant. I mean, Lou, this is 1 in 20 babies, and that's in Florida. We're talking about this stuff nationwide.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, and the corridor there in Florida where a lot of this actually started to happen, where the oxy epidemic started to take off, you know, here's the monitoring part. We talked to a lot of OBGYN and asked them, you know, are you doing any blood work for these circumstances? Because you think, okay, if we have somebody who's now having these problems, how do we wean them off before the developmental stages start to go through? I mean, look at least the first, second, and third trimester. You know, there's so much evidence that We don't know how certain things will affect those growth levels, especially in those critical first two, let alone the third one, especially when you're talking about these kinds of compounds, these heavy, very, very serious chemical compounds and opiates and what have you. And imagine that there's a place down through the I-95 corridor called the OxyContin Express. There was a big documentary done on it that was aired over tons of different stations about, pill mills and doctors who are opening up shop and not good doctors, very unfortunately. There's a whole bunch of money to be made. You know how crazy this is, Donna? We heard from somebody who has got a brother who is a felon, into jail for distributing illegal drugs, who came out and started to make something like $150,000 every 4 days by just pilfering the legal stuff and pushing it around. I mean, it's like, there's so much money involved here, and, it isn't because of the money that we have all these people that are flooding the market with these kinds of products. As long as there is a profitability in taking advantage of people suffering and perpetrating things, and, of course, when we look at what our governmental agencies should be really doing in cracking down on these kinds of overt abuses, the initial companies, Purdue Pharma, had sold this whole idea of OxyContin to the FDA, that it was not addictive, it's easy to manage the patient, they could get on and off exactly as they need, it was going to be really, really be the best other opiate medication that was going to totally eliminate all the problems that all the previous drugs had. And of course, within a year of this phenomenal amount of upswing and this promise that this would be a good thing, the dark side of this came out, and they actually fined, whether it be the FTC or the FDA or one of the governmental agencies, actually fined Purdue Pharma something like $634 million because of what they did, but you didn't see the product go off the marketplace.
Right.
So these are really big other problems. They're very evident and obvious to all of us who look at the stuff all the time. And as long as we have people in Washington saying and promoting, we want to make sure that all of our seniors have affordable drug care, as opposed to, wait a minute, guys, let's go and find out how many medicines our seniors are taking and who the heck set them up for 17 different medicines that they don't need,
Right.
And prevention is just a buzzword. It should be something we're doing. And again, if it's not about that ultimate marker, the most precious new people coming into the world, then where in the world are we going to stop? I mean, that's the key. And, our company does a lot of things about that, right? So we don't spend much time pointing anybody's fingers because that's a waste of time. We take action and do what we have to do, and I know you do as well, and that's why this information for people is so important.
Well, I know that we are getting close to finishing our chat, and it's always a joy, Lou, to be able to bring this information forward. And you made a point that I think was very significant. Asking those in the medical field, why don't you do a blood test? Find out if someone's on medication. There has to be a blood test that in these clinics, wherever, when pregnant women come in, they can test them. Find out what the chemistry level is in their body, because it does make a difference. And you don't give an addict more stuff. And to read information about how doctors are giving medicines to these tiny, tiny human beings because they're addicted, and doctors are saying we have to get the kids drugs so that they stop being in pain. This is horrific.
Yep.
It is really horrific. And I just think there is just so much out there, and I'm so glad we had a chance to talk about this. Now, your website, people can go to biomedics.com, they can go to topperson.com. You've got an awesome newsletter where you put out all kinds of information on a regular basis.
And
your products are homeopathic, they are safe, and there's all kinds of information regarding research, etc., that is on your site. And I just encourage those of you that are listening, we have to be aware. And we have to speak out. It's so important. Don't assume anything. Question.
That's right.
Because this is chemistry that is destroying the capability, mentally, physically, even emotionally, with children. And absolutely, as Lou said, these tiny little persons, they haven't even had a chance at life.
Exactly.
And they've already started out with these handicaps. Lou, it's a delight. I'm glad we were able to connect today. Thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to adjust so we could chat today. I really appreciate you.
Oh, goodness, I appreciate you, Donna, and thank you so much again as well for today, and hope that this information will lead people to take proactivity and start helping their family members and questioning the doctors and helping form real good alliances from a local community to the bigger community nationally to really get these things talked about, a strategy for helping people who are addicted and preventing these terrible tragedies of our most innocent, blameless people, our newborns.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree with you more. This is Donna Siebel. My goodness, it's just gone by so quickly, as it always does. I invite you to join me again tomorrow, same time, same place. We have wonderful things to share with you. My thanks again to Lou Paradise and to Thomas Fusco for being with me today and for being open and sharing their knowledge and experience with you, my listening audience. Have a magnificent day or evening wherever you are in this wonderful planet of ours. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Talk with you tomorrow. Bye for now.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Siebel. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. Odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprosin.com. That's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N. And find out more information. You can order Toprosin online or call 800-959-1007. That's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprosin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it.
You have been listening to The Donna Siebel Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Siebel Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.